A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. Today, we'll delve into the upcoming production of Julia Woolf's Anthracite Fields, the Pulitzer Prize-winning oratorio that is being performed by Westminster Choir College. The work explores the world of Pennsylvania coal country, and the performance at Trenton's Roebling Wire Works will highlight the ties between this bygone industrial era and our present-day world. I'll speak with Woolf and director Doug Verone, as well as conductor Joe Miller, historian Clifford Zink, Westminster Dean Matthew Schaftel, and several of the students who will be singing. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Pulitzer Prizes were announced this week, and the award for music went to Angel's Bone, an opera written by Chinese composer Du Yun. In its citation, the Pulitzer Committee called it a bold operatic work that integrates vocal and instrumental elements and wide range of styles into a hallowing allegory for human trafficking in the modern world. The story follows two angels who fall from heaven and are discovered by a couple who, after helping them recover from their injuries, seek to exploit them for their own gains and riches. The libretto is by Royce Vavreck. Born in Shanghai, Dai Yun's work has ranged across several genres, including chamber music, cabaret, oral tradition, and electronics. The other finalists were Bound to the Bow by Ashley Fuhr and Ipsa Dixit by Kate Soper. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. In the 2 years since Julia Woolf's oratorio Anthracite Fields won the Pulitzer Prize, the work, depicting the lives of miners and their families in Pennsylvania coal country, has been performed about a half dozen times, mostly in concert halls, churches, and other more traditional performance venues. This month, the oratorio will come to life in an industrial setting that draws a direct historical and cultural connection to the role anthracite coal once played in the life of industrial-era cities, and continues to play in powering our everyday lives. Students at Westminster Choir College of Rider University will perform the work in a semi-stage production at the Roebling Wire Works in Trenton, one of the reminders of the city's former status as a major industrial powerhouse. The venue will invite audience members to reflect more closely on the stories of the miners and their circumstances. Woolf drew on her own Pennsylvania roots when she received a commission from the Mendelssohn Club in Philadelphia for a new choral work. Earlier this week, she talked about her inspiration during a panel discussion at the Princeton Public Library.
I'm from a small town in Pennsylvania, Montgomery, York. I used to travel down to New York, just go further north towards Philadelphia. And right near my home is the highway Theater 9, Route Theater 9. And so if you took the highway to the south, you'd land in Philadelphia, which is where the fire is. And then if you took the highway the other way, you would wind up in Baltimore's Scranton. It's a region I really didn't know a lot about. Mostly we drove into Philadelphia where the restaurants were and the culture. This was my first commission from my home state, and I've worked in a lot of cities, in a lot of countries, and so I thought, well, this is very interesting. First time I'm connecting with where I'm from, and that is what led me to look to the region. So yeah, that led me on this whole exploration, and I would go up to Scranton, take the bus up, because there aren't a lot of ways to get it from New York City. There's no train line that I know of. So hopping the bus, and Laurie McCants would meet me in Scranton and drive me around, and we went to lots of interesting sites, like the Anthracite Heritage Museum, which I think is really one of the most remarkable museums in the world. It's a tiny little museum, but depicts everything about the life in the coal mining of that region. So everything from the tools to the clothing to political issues, tragedies, it's all there and really beautifully displayed. So I spent a lot of time there talking to historians, and that led me to interviewing people, third generation miner, the lovely woman working in the gift shop who was the daughter and granddaughter of miners, and grew up in a patch town. For those who don't know, a patch town is the town that the coal company would build. So Did you know the song 16 tons? What do you get? But they owe my soul to the company store. Well, it really was a company store. So you have these little houses built by the coal company, and you bought your food at the store run by the coal company. So a fairly modest to impoverished life. And she was probably the sunniest person I have ever met. So that was interesting. So learned so much about region from talking to people, reading books, watching documentaries, reading old newspaper articles.
That extensive research led to this five-movement work, which includes a haunting roll call of the names of many of the men who were injured on the job that required them to descend into the mines day after day, an energetic rhythmic movement about the breaker boys, young boys whose job it was to separate the coal from impurities, and flowers, a remembrance of the vibrantly colorful gardens that the women of the so-called patch towns cultivated to bring some joy into their lives. I spoke with Wolf about the upcoming performance, which will feature the Westminster Choir and Bang on the Can All-Stars, an ensemble rooted in the new music-focused Bang on the Can Festival, first launched by Wolf and other colleagues in 1987. She said she's looking forward to how Anthracite Fields translates to the factory setting.
I think probably the first thing that comes to mind is sound, because sound can be so incredible in a cavernous space, but it's also challenging. And luckily, that's not necessarily my challenge, because peace is what it is. So, but we work with these really amazing sound engineers. In a certain sense, the guys we work with are like the seventh member of the band, and they've had a lot of experience with this piece. But this will be the first time, I guess, aside from the premiere, which was in a kind of cavernous church, the first time in a space this size. And I know they're going to work their magic, but I think just getting the balance, making sure everybody can hear each other, that the singers can hear each other, that the singers can hear the band. We do use a monitor system so that people can hear what they need in a monitor. But sound is probably a challenge. Sight might be as well, because we're doing a different spacing out of musicians and choir singers. So just that they can see each other, that they can see the conductor. These are sort of technical issues. But I think that the magic of that space is worth those challenges. Sometimes you take the sleep because it's such an incredible environment, and you go, well, I guess we'll figure that out. I mean, everything has to be brought in. Like, there's no piano there. There's no sound system. All the things that we have in a concert hall, lighting is going to have to be brought in. These are all challenges to work with, but I think people are now, site-specific work is a known thing, and so it just takes a little more effort to get it all up and going.
You talked earlier about working with the chance to work with younger singers. What are you hoping that these singers take away from this experience?
Well, first of all, it's challenging music. I mean, there's more challenging music than this music. I think that in many ways there's a straightforwardness to the way I've written it. But nonetheless, certain of the rhythms are not easy. Even just counting triplets, and singers are, I think, used to, I should say which singers. I mean, these guys have probably taken on all kinds of challenges, but I'd say rhythmically it's a challenge. I think pitch-wise, not so much. I do also ask for some special techniques, so that requires a certain kind of openness. They're whistling in harmony. People don't, when you think of whistling, it's like whistle a tune. You don't necessarily whistle a chord. So they're now having to stay in tune while they're whistling and holding whistling notes for a long time. They're making a kind of vocal, kind of glottal kind of sound where they're cupping their hands over their mouths. And I was trying to evoke the depth of the mines and a kind of eerie sound that's almost makes you wonder, are they singing? Are they not singing? Are those voices? Are those instruments? Trying to blend them, using them almost like an instrument. And that's at the very opening of the piece. They're shouting at one point because they're in the Breaker Boys movement, they're kind of being really sassy, and they just go from singing into shouting. So these are different kinds of challenges, and in some ways, I think, yeah, especially like a choir like Westminster, they'll be game for that. They won't be like, why are we shouting? Why aren't we singing? That's part of the piece. And that, it's true for the instrumental, so that they're used to me making them do all kinds of crazy stuff. So I've written a number of pieces for them. But for the choir, I think there's some fun. I think of them as fun challenges and new ways of making music.
Well, Westminster is turning this really into a communal experience and an educational experience as well for area school children. Had you seen your work in that context, or are you now seeing even new possibilities that are opening up for future performances?
I didn't think about it when I wrote it, and I am kind of amazed. And this is kind of maybe a bigger question than the sort of the community where it's happening, but I'm amazed at its connection to people who are connected to the industry. So in other words, pretty much every week I get an email or a letter from someone who's related to a coal miner. This is not something composers usually experience, something I certainly did not anticipate. That has been remarkable, a really, really great experience for me to suddenly dialogue with people who are interested in the piece, interested in the way it honors that life. I definitely didn't have any idea that that would happen or anticipate that. So that's sort of the first layer, I guess. And then when I've gone to performances, I think at every performance, I don't know if there's one where that didn't happen, someone has come up to me and told me their stories. In some cases, I've got like a line of like, 15 people waiting to come and say, my uncle worked in the mines, he had this ailment or that ailment. And this happens, I'm pretty sure it's happened at every performance. I can't think of one where it hasn't happened. Oh, Denmark. But every other one, it happened. And even in Los Angeles, where I wouldn't have anticipated it happening, someone came up and said, my grandfather is on your list. His name is John Coyle. And that was chilling. And also just this whole other kind of experience as an artist, that suddenly you're doing the work that you want to do, expressing what you want to express, but it has this other layer of communication that's going on.
That was Julia Wolf, whose Pulitzer Prize-winning oratorio, Anthracite Fields, will be performed this month by the Westminster Choir. When Anthracite Fields came to the attention of the staff at Westminster, it seemed to fit perfectly into the school's mission of community transformation through music, and in particular, the school's Transforming Places program, which is designed to bring music into public spaces throughout the region. Matthew Scheftel, Dean of Westminster College of the Arts, said that staging the work in the Roebling Wireworks was a perfect way to connect history and music, and also offered an educational experience that could be brought to students in local schools.
This is an opportunity for the community to come together. We're drawing in the influences from, obviously, our region and our history, the Trenton history, the history of the anthracite coal mining in the area, and bringing this to the Roebling factory, which has this incredible legacy in terms of its connection to American construction and the bridges that we were building and elevators and skyscrapers, all of which were driven by the steel cables that they were building. And we connect all of that to modern-day Trenton that is sort of engaging itself in a question about what do we do, how do we define ourselves in a post-industrial moment? So we get to transform a space that is about industry in a post-industrial world into something that's about creativity. And I really feel quite committed to the idea that the future of Trenton is Trenton creates, instead of Trenton makes. And I think that is the incredible vibrancy of the arts in Trenton are a sign of that. So that's one of the reasons why we're bringing the school children to a couple of different workshops. We have a big workshop on Friday and another workshop on Monday. We have an entire curriculum online. It's 8 lesson plans that teachers have been doing with the students to sort of prepare them in the history of the region and the labor movement and so forth. And then they'll get to experience the piece and ask questions. And then my favorite part is really that the school children and the will go back to their schools and they will transform a space in their schools through music or through the arts in general. So one of the schools we are working with has already told us plans to create a space in a courtyard that hadn't been used in a long time and make that a poetry, arts, and music performance space. And I think that's the kind of lasting impression we want to create. And anyway, that's that notion of shifting from the maker economy to the creator economy. And that's where I think the arts intersect with all the other things that are going on in society today.
Director and choreographer Doug Verrone, who has worked on the dance stage and in opera, is directing the production, which will include multimedia projections as well as choreographed movement. For example, during the Flowers movement, the women in the choir are in chairs with men sitting at their feet, calling to mind the image of mothers sharing stories with their children.
I feel like what we've tried to do is create environment. 40 choristers, bang on a can, a beautiful sense of imagery through photographic and video images, all combining to create scenarios that give weight and integrity to Julia's score in a visual way. So within the score itself are five different movements, and each of these movements are referenced in five completely different tableaus that are constantly moving and shifting. So the audience is allowed to see human beings on stage, not necessarily portraying the score itself, but living in the score.
What would you say were the challenges in taking the score and bringing it specifically to this venue?
I work a great deal in site-specific work, so the venue itself is really thrilling. And, you know, I love the challenge of trying to find a way to pay homage to the score, homage to the subject, and homage to the space itself. So those three items feel like it needs to be formative in terms of how I create the work itself.
What first struck you as you began to listen to this piece the first time you heard it?
Well, all of Julia's work for me has this incredible sense of humanity to it. Her orchestral works, the works that she does for Bang on a Can, this choral work in particular, partly because of the voices that are bringing it to life, feel potent. There's a sense of bodies speaking through their voices, which I understand because I speak with my body as a director and a choreographer. So I kind of cherish the opportunities to create discourse like this because they are about who we are as human beings, how we live, how we die, very much so within the confines of this score. There's something immensely universal about the subject matter that I find a great attraction to in terms of creating.
That was director and choreographer Doug Verrone. Joe Miller is director of choral activities at Westminster, and he'll be conducting the performance. He said preparing the work has provided musical challenges and educational opportunities to the students.
The challenges of the piece are that it has, I would say, some roots in John Adams and Steve Rice, and has a minimalistic types of qualities, which means that there are a lot of changing patterns. So learning those changing patterns is difficult, and just making sure there's really intricate and accurate rhythm. And then in the performance that we're doing, it will be memorized. So memorizing is also probably the biggest challenge that we have. And then finally, we're doing it with the piece with staging. It already has video and this incredible group called Bang on a Can All Stars that are performing. And then we will be adding staging to that. And so having to memorize and do all of this while they are dramatically portraying it is the challenge for the choir.
What type of experiences do you think it's bringing them?
Well, the piece itself is so relevant to today's dialogue, you know, talking about coal and clean coal, need for energy, global warming, all of the things, you know, that are in our dialogue today. First of all, the students are learning that art reflects society, and this is an immediate piece that has relevance today. I think it also helps them when they work on a new piece like this that has that relevance. It's training them to be leaders and to dream about how their own music, when they go out and continue their professional lives, how is that going to connect to the world? The music itself, being new, really opens their ears to the current choices that composers are making. I think it teaches them to be risk takers and to not be afraid to dream about how they're going to attach music to society, how art is going to be part of society, and how they're going to lead that.
The students found many things to appreciate in preparing the work, from singing technique, staging, and conducting style, to the meaning of the words in the stories. Here are some of their thoughts. You'll hear graduate conducting student Scott Coven, graduate student Alex Simon, senior vocal performance major Temple Hammond, music education major Jonathan Hartwell, and Alicia Brozovich, a graduate student in choral conducting.
It's very different than, I guess, something a little bit more traditional in Western art music. As a conducting student, when I learn music, I always try and understand how the constituent parts work together. And for a piece like this, it's not always so intuitive. You have to do a lot more cold memorization, and you have to look at it in a more intellectual way. And so that's been an interesting process for me, and a lot of it is just actually identifying patterns, but it's very intellectual as opposed to intuitive. As a choral student here, we don't get a lot of opportunity to fully stage our work. We typically will incorporate some element of staging into our tour program, for example, but it's not really typical that we'll bring in a choreographer, certainly someone as renowned as Doug Barone, to actually work with us and stage the entire work and assign meaning to each movement that we do. It definitely makes you think about all the aspects of your performance as opposed to just the music. And in terms of the space, I think it's just going to be a very enriching experience getting to perform in such a historically rich space, such an industrial space, in a work that deals with the human aspects of an industrial lifestyle, and certainly a dangerous one. I'm excited to see what sort of meaningful connections we can make to the actual space once we start to rehearse there and ultimately when we perform it.
Musically, it's just been fascinating. It's not very often we get to perform this type of music. It's very modern. It's quite challenging. And compared to what Westminster Choir usually does, it's such a otherworldly experience in some ways. And so challenging, but also very rewarding as a musician, just trying to get a grasp of new music and get an understanding of what modern composers are trying to achieve through their music. As a West Coaster originally coming from the West Coast, it's been such an enlightening experience learning about the coal mines in Pennsylvania and the issues that the coal miners would go through. And you just don't really hear about that where I'm from, just because that's not really a part of our economic development. But it's been really fascinating to learn about that history and to learn the response of different groups. And so when we talk about the speeches that we've heard in response to a lot of the coal miners not getting the proper benefits that they were getting at the time, and a lot of the physical conditions that they had to go into trying to battle and trying to basically get this coal out of the ground, it's just so extraordinary, something that I didn't learn about growing up through school, but so I'm just so glad I get the experience of trying to learn that now and really learning about the history through the music.
That aspect of it is really neat, just that we're able to bring it down almost to a level where children and, you know, just younger kids can understand. And I hope that it's, of course, something that they've probably never really seen before, which is exciting. You know, they'll get their mind working and hopefully their artistic mind working and think, oh, could I do something like this? Even at that, you know, at that base level, could I start to be in music or start to be in dancer or something like that? So that's at the base level. But then also, we hope that they'll, of course, understand this story, even just a little bit, understand, oh, maybe is someone hurting or is someone in pain, and then see how that flows throughout them connecting it maybe with their own experiences. I think that that's what we hope also at a grander level for those just coming to our performances, but especially the younger ones and the kids. I think that just the pure understanding of what we're doing in the story would be really fantastic, I think.
I was not very aware of how much sacrifice and how much we owe the coal mining industry. Like in the first movement, singing all the John names from the coal mining accidents, and those are just men named John, you know, and it's able to fill like 10 minutes worth of space of just these men who sacrificed their lives. Then going on to movement two, the Breaker Boys, like learning about the children that wouldn't wear gloves and shred their fingers because they had to pick up the anthracite glass. It's very, a very haunting work. For me personally, I've been thinking about the educational standpoint because that's what I'm studying to be an education major. And I think the students themselves should really just really take a moment to sit down and listen and just try to understand like what it would be like being in those men's positions or the Breaker Boys' position, and understand like how like, you know, how scary it could be or how like hard like life can be sometimes, but you know they did it because they needed money
and maybe it'll like teach people to be a little more thankful for what they have and what people have sacrificed in the past for us to have the luxuries that we do have today. So hopefully for kids and my point of view would maybe be an eye-opening experience and maybe, you know, like humble some and have to just understand like how hard some people work.
It's a lot along the lines of what I'm wanting to do as a choral conductor when I graduate, in finding the stories of America and the stories of our world and bringing them to light through the arts in a new way, through the community. And so doing something collaborative with dancers, instrumentalists, choir, and cinematography through the media we'll be using has been an incredibly enlightening thing for me to see how it all comes together. But then it's also been very rewarding because the message of the music is something that I believe in. What I'm able to relate to the most is probably how the stories themselves tend to be untold stories. So I'm from an area in the country where people say, oh, Kansas, where's that, right? And the stories from Anthracite Fields, I'd never heard of. Part of the learning curve for me has been learning this part of American history. And so I think it's relatable for me in that I'm seeing it through the same perspective that a lot of the audience will be seeing it and hearing it, and that I didn't even know this was part of our history. I didn't even know this was part of our story. And it seems to be obscure, but it was something that literally happened right in our backyard. Sort of like living in Kansas. So I thought that it was really interesting to learn that we have stories like this. We're always in America looking to other people's stories in other countries, and we consider ourselves to be such a baby country sometimes that I think we forget that we have a history and we have important things that need to be told.
Those were just some thoughts from the students in the Westminster Choir who will be performing Anthracite Fields. The historical element is an important aspect of this production, and I spoke with Clifford Zink, historian, historic preservationist, and author of The Roebling Legacy, about the relevance of the Roebling Wireworks.
John Roebling founded the factory in Trenton in 1849, and three additional generations of his family ran it into the 1950s. I would say for the first 60 years, the primary source of fuel to run the entire plant was anthracite coal. Trenton was the cheapest place on tidewater, as Abram Hewitt said, for the delivery of coal to factories. And that was because the anthracite coal came down the Lehigh River and part of the Lehigh Canal to the Delaware River. Once the coal barges crossed the river, they could put the coal onto coal trains, which went down what was called the Belvedere and Delaware Railroad all the way to Trenton. And so the Trenton factories had the least expensive coal on the East Coast.
That was historian Clifford Zink. You can hear more from him and my other guests on our website at wwfm.org. Anthracite Fields will be performed April 21st and 22nd at the Roebling Wireworks in Trenton. More information is available at rider.edu/anthracite_fields. I hope you appreciate the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo and all of the other high-quality programs of the award-winning Classical Network. Remember, these programs are possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. An archive of recent shows can be found anytime at our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the changing world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network.